Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 26th of August. This is a listener request. Somebody called in during our last open line or the one before the last open line suggesting we do a show on medical tourism. And it sounded like an intriguing idea, and so indeed we have done this. We'll be talking about people in the United States, and actually it's happening with people coming to the United States as well, but our guests this hour have been working to provide medical treatment in places outside the United States. There are a number of reasons for this, partially because of the expense, partially because some of the surgeries are not done in the United States. So some of the common kinds of surgeries would be knee replacements, hip replacements, spine surgery, cardiology, hysterectomy, weight loss, gallbladder surgery, liver transplant, kidney transplant, bone marrow transplants, cosmetic surgery. And people are going for services that are too costly or aren't readily available in North America. This hour of the program, we'll be talking with Wouter Herbrex. Wouter is the CEO of World Med Assist, and this is one of the leading medical tourism companies in the United States. They provide high-quality doctors and hospitals in various countries in the world. They are affiliated with top U.S. hospitals. They qualify the hospitals around the world and the medical professionals firsthand by conducting assessments. We'll be talking about that. And they are a member of the Medical Tourism Association and the Better Business Bureau. Also joining us is Henry Konzak. He is the owner of Henry J. Productions and completed a heart valve replacement that was done in India by a cardiac surgeon. So we'll talk about his experience as well. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would think that you might have a lot of interest in this topic, and you're certainly welcome to join the conversation at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Wouter, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Henry, thank you so much for being with us as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be an interesting hour. Let's start with you, Wouter. Tell me about World Med Assist, why you got started, and what need you saw for such services.
Yeah, we got started about 3 years ago, which is a long time in such a new industry. And really, what got it started is we saw a clear need for improvement to the U.S. healthcare crisis. I'm not originally from the Netherlands, and several members of the company are not from the U.S. I'm sorry, as well. And so we were able to make some comparisons to how healthcare is delivered in other countries. And that combined with, you know, the staggering cost of healthcare here, we saw a clear market niche there. And, you know, in addition, it's a very nice way to help people out.
You are from the Netherlands originally?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Oh, you don't sound like it at all.
I've been in the country for a long time.
I guess so, yeah, you can do that. So tell me what you do. You provide the hospitals, you provide the doctors for what kinds of procedures?
Yeah, I think at a very high level, you can put our service into two different buckets. One is patient advocacy, and the other one is making everything logistically very easy. So as part of patient advocacy, we select the hospitals, we do a lot of due diligence, we go down to the doctor level as well, and help people out in all kinds of areas logistically. So we arrange for the medical documents to be transferred. We set up conference calls with the doctors. We schedule their surgery. We arrange follow-up care for when they come back in the States. While they're abroad, we keep their family members up to date. So it's a full set of services, and the types of surgeries that we arrange they range from, you know, the list that you provided earlier as part of the introduction was a very good list. They range from the very simple, such as gallbladder surgeries, all the way to something like Henry had, heart valve replacement, and even liver transplants.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, Henry, why did you go abroad? Why did you go to India?
Well, I had been diagnosed with a mitral valve regurgitation, and the doctor looked at me and said, "You have to have this taken care of now." 2 years before, my insurance was just taken away because of pre-existing conditions. So I was already investigating, medical travel because I wouldn't know what else to do anyway. So I guess the tough part is obviously when you're at your worst is when you have to make the most important decision of your life. And so I just got on the internet, and I threw a doctor here, an Indian doctor actually, recommended Dr. Naresh Trehan. So I started doing an internet search and found World Medicist, and, they took it from there.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to speak about his case, Henry? Is it typical or not?
Pardon me?
Is Henry's case a typical one or extraordinary one?
It's not very extraordinary. I mean, we've helped other people get heart bypass and heart valve replacements. I'd say what's more common than that, though, is orthopedics and spine. But we do see a lot of heart cases as well.
And do you see a lot of people who are denied insurance because of pre-existing conditions?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that people need to go outside of the U.S., yes.
Mm-hmm. Were you nervous about all of this, Henry? This is a big decision to make.
I was scared to death.
I'll bet you were.
Can't think straight, and the doctor says you need this now, and then they told me in the States it'd be $130,000 to $170,000, and I said, well, I don't make that much money. Can we make a deal? And pretty much they said, well, good luck with that, And then so I had to get on the internet and find some help.
And what was the cost difference having this done in India?
Well, with hotels, flights are pretty pricey. That was actually one of the more expensive things in December. I just had this in past December.
Oh.
I was $20,000 complete, and I originally thought I would just need a repair. It turns out I needed a full replacement, and it wasn't a penny more.
$20,000 compared to $170,000?
Yeah, so I borrowed money from family. It kept my business from going bankrupt. It kept me from, faking a heart attack and going to the emergency room, which that's not me. I couldn't do that.
Oh, my gosh. Why in the world is there such a price difference here, Wouter?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Kathleen. I think it's for a lot of reasons. I think one of the main reasons is the difference in cost of living. A cardiac surgeon, even a very renowned surgeon that like the one that helped Henry, he might make $100,000, maybe $200,000. His colleague of equal status in the U.S., he would be making several million dollars. And that's, for the doctor, that's just one example, but that goes all the way down to the level of the construction workers that put the hospital together. So the cost of doing business, the cost of living and the cost of doing business is so much cheaper in so many countries outside the U.S. So that's one of the major reasons. I think another reason is we're seeing a lot of these new hospitals in foreign countries get developed, and they're basically greenfield sites. So they're able to do it right from the start. These hospitals are developed for today's patient. With all the new IT in place, information technology in place, all the systems in place, and there's a lot of efficiency that goes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the final reason is, the major reasons is that in the U.S., defensive medicine is practiced. So with the fear of lawsuits, there are a lot of additional tests, a lot of additional costs are incurred that way. In many countries abroad, that fear of liability is much less there. So they're able to prescribe the test and prescribe the treatment that's absolutely needed, that's absolutely to the advantage of the patient.
Mm-hmm. Wouter, in what countries do you operate? Where do you send people?
Yeah, we work in six countries right now. So India, we talked about. We also work in Korea, in Turkey, in Belgium, in Costa Rica, and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been really very selective. We only work with eight hospitals, and really because they provide what we feel is really the top quality that people are looking for.
Henry, what kinds of insurances did you need before you went for your surgery?
I didn't have anything. I just went.
You just went?
Yeah, I mean, what choice did I have? Nobody will insure me. I mean,
no, assurances. Assurances.
Search for outside help because I tried to, get insurance some other way or from someone else, and once I don't know, when you're blacklisted or whatever, you know, you just got to fend for yourself.
Right. No, I meant assurances did you have that you were going to get good care? No, that's okay.
I had talked to the doctors, and then again, an Indian doctor here in the States recommended Naresh Trehan, and then I had a phone conference. I sent my, emailed my, and FTP'd my information and my MRIs or whatever I had to the doctor. He looked those over. They organized, Janet Kwan helped organize a conference call with the doctor. Then we sat and talked, and he says, yes, I can help you, and this is what you need.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Kathleen, I think one of the things that Henry did really well is he did a lot of research. Even before he contacted us, he had done a lot of research, and had he not done that, that is something that we would have advised him. We would have given him the tools to do a lot of research, because that's what we want. We want people to go into this with their eyes wide open, because, you know, regardless of where medicine is practiced, things can go wrong. So people need to realize that before they undergo treatment.
Right. And that's why I believe it's true in all the countries, maybe not all, that you're sending people to tertiary facilities.
Yes. Yep. We do not work with small clinics. We work with full tertiary care hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And do you guide people through when you get off the airplane? You may be in a country where you don't even speak the language.
Absolutely. There's somebody waiting for you. They're holding a sign with your name on it. They come and get you. You go in the hospital van. Pretty much they're going to take you right over there. They took good care of us right into the hospital. And then, you know, I'm not there to sightsee or, you know,
right.
I don't have to drive myself or anything. So it went very well.
Uh-huh. And how long were you there, Henry?
3 weeks. And 2 weeks in the hospital. In India, they do have a lot of rheumatic fevers. So I talked to Dr. Rajneesh at one time, and he says at one time they were doing 100 hearts a day. These are the folks I want working on me.
Really? 100 hearts a day?
Well, you know, I've seen
sure.
every kind of complication
right.
that probably could occur.
Right. Is it true? I think I read, Volter, that in many other countries, the hospitals stay, that we're in the business of getting people out as quickly as possible. The stay may be longer because they have different ideas about how long somebody should be in the hospital following surgery?
Yeah, absolutely. So Henry's case, 2 weeks in the hospital, you know, in the U.S., it would have been 2 days probably. And that's not an exception at all. So, for instance, I mean, the U.S. knee replacement is more and more done on an outpatient basis, whereas in many of the countries that we work with, it's a 7-day stay in the hospital. And you know, that's directly correlated. Such a long stay in the hospital is directly correlated with faster and better recovery in the end as well. You know, while they're in the hospital, they go through physical therapy. Of course, they get the best medical care to begin with, but they also get physical therapy. And really, when they leave the hospital, they're very well on their way to recovery. And then depending on which country people go to, so a country that's as far away as India, people typically need to stay in a hotel after hospital discharge to recover further, because it obviously is a very long flight. But for a country like Mexico, right across the border, typically people can come back home very soon after hospital
mm-hmm.
discharge.
Mm-hmm. And you must have been a little upset. It's hard to imagine you're living in this wealthy country, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, Henry, and you can't get, you have to pay $170,000 to get an operation that you need to keep you living, that you have to borrow money from friends to go pay for an operation somewhere else in the world. That would make me furious.
I'm not furious, but I mean, it's upsetting, again, you're not thinking at your best, and now you got to make this huge decision, and it's like, you know, the doctor said do it now. So, yeah, I'm a little upset. I think, you know, they should cover pre-existing conditions and not force you to, like, you know, fake illness so that you can get any kind of care. It's just a lot of people are just, you know, they can't do it.
Right. I never even thought of faking an illness so you can get care.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, but you know, I wouldn't know what else to do. I mean, they pretty much—they did say no. I mean, I can't say they pretty much said no.
They said no.
Yeah, you know, and then and what I would have liked is if any doctor or anybody could take me on the side and says, "Hey, Henry, there's a guy in Wisconsin. He'll help you." Even off the record, they just won't do anything.
Right, right.
So you're just sitting in your room thinking, what do I do now?
Right, which you shouldn't have to do because you weren't feeling well. How do you feel now, Henry?
Excellent, yeah. I'm back to, you know, I mean, I came back in January 6th, and they even told me before I even went to the hotel, says, actually, you're in good enough shape, because I was in pretty good shape when I started. I take pretty good care of myself. They said, you could fly home now. So we flew home. We took another week and then flew home. And they still did all the follow-ups. They still, you know, they'd get send a van to the hotel and take me back to the hospital for, you know, the blood tests and like an MRI or whatever, $75 there.
Oh, my gosh.
So I bought some for everybody, you know. There's a round of MRIs for everybody in this room here, you know. So, it was baffling that you could get that done. And so they did all the follow-up right until I got on the plane and left.
Tell me about other cases, other people that you've worked with, Valter. I'm sure you have some incredibly interesting stories.
Yeah, we do. This is a feel good job. You know, we're able to help people like Henry that really, like he just said, what do I do now? And we're able in a lot of cases to provide those people with really a very affordable and high quality solution. That's the key. On the extreme side, we've helped other people get liver transplants. People that, you know, wouldn't have been with us anymore if we, you know, didn't play our role. We play a small role there. Obviously, it's the medical team that plays a major role, but we'd like to think that we do play a critical role there. So several people that we've helped, you know, 3 years ago even, we're still in contact with them today. And as a non-medical professional, I'm not a medical professional myself, it's extremely rewarding to know that, to know that you've made a difference. On the kind of lighter side, we've helped people get knee replacement. There was a lady from Iowa that needed a bilateral knee replacement. She was, in addition to not having insurance, she was also very allergic to certain kinds of metals. So we special ordered two knee replacement devices for her. Her cost in the U.S. would have been well over $100,000, and she got it for $17,000.
Goodness.
And you know, those, they're similar to the savings that Henry is talking about. And that's what we find lots of times, you know, 90% savings. We had another patient that needed a heart treatment, radio frequency ablation. His cost in the U.S. would have been $93,000, and he got it done for $3,000 instead. It's like that, you know, and obviously when we talk about the less serious procedures, the savings are not as deep. So, for instance, a hysterectomy, you know, maybe $20,000 in the U.S. and probably $6,000, somewhere around that, in Mexico. That's still, you know, a 70% savings. So still very significant, but not to the 90% tune that Henry and some other people had.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls. We actually, our lines are filled right now, but keep the number in your head and you'll be able to get through. 800-486-8655. Our guests are the CEO of World Med Assist, Valter Huberex, and also joining us is Henry Konzak. And Henry is the owner of Henry J. Productions and just had extensive heart surgery done in India for a fraction of the cost. Well, he couldn't get insurance because of pre-existing conditions in the United States. So he researched all of this and found Valter and his services and found a doctor in India who performs this at, what did he say, $20,000 complete. And he was told it would be between $130 and $170 in the States. Ooh. Amazing. So let's go to you in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now, starting with Boyd from Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Kathleen, and hello to both of your guests. This is a fascinating show. The reason I bring it up is I have been for a number of years trying to do the same thing. I've actually been in touch with this hospital in Thailand, and they also have a hospital in India and Singapore called Bumrungrad. I might be pronouncing it wrong. I don't know if you're familiar with it. And I heard about them in a magazine called Fast Company. And what they do the same. That people who literally can't afford operations over here, they end up going over there. I eventually have to have my knee sculpted. I actually tore the meniscus literally 7 years ago, and I have not been able to get any help. And yeah, it's because of pre-existing and what have you. I guess my question is, are you familiar, first of all, with Bumrungrad International Hospital? And then if I can also ask if this is relevant, you hear where a lot of people say doctors from Canada come to the U.S. to get operations, but it seems everyone else is, you know, looking at your organization. How do you respond to that? And I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, Boyd, thanks for the call. Valter?
Yeah, I am familiar with Bumrungrad. They are one of the main players. They really started off very early with this and are extremely successful. They treat a lot of American patients, mainly in Thailand. That's where their main facility is. We don't work with them. We work with other hospitals, but obviously this is a very good hospital. I'd be happy to help Boyd with his torn meniscus. For a kind of minor surgery like that one is, most cost effective would be a destination closer by. Because although the savings in a country like India on the pure medical part for something like a torn meniscus would still be highest, you have to add to that the higher cost of a plane ticket, longer stay there, longer stay after hospital discharge. So basically those deeper discounts compared to a country, say, like Mexico, would be negated by those additional costs. So for something like a torn meniscus, Mexico or Turkey or Costa Rica would probably be the better destination. As far as doctors from Canada coming to the U.S., yeah, I know that happens. Canada has a different set of problems. They're not related to cost because the government takes care of paying the bills, but they're related to access because there is no restriction really on getting care. The result is waiting lines. We have helped people from Canada that, for instance, for their knee replacement had been waiting for 2 years. So we help those people out as well.
Thanks, Boyd. Let's go to Kathleen from Oak Creek. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm asking one question I have is defensive medicine. They said it's less practiced. And what is the legal recourse if there is a problem? And my second question is part of the accessibility to liver transplants because other countries are allowed to pay people to donate livers?
Okay. Yeah, in terms of legal recourse, our patients have to abide by the laws in the country of treatment. And when it comes to legalities, they are different from what they are in the U.S. Having said that, there is such a thing as malpractice insurance in all the countries that we work with. It's not to the tune of the several million dollar coverage that's related to the punitive damage system that we have here in the U.S. And that's something that I'm very happy about. The goal of the malpractice insurance abroad is to make sure that the patient gets made whole, that his medical needs are taken care of. So that's the level of insurance that's there. In addition to that, we provide several insurance products that protect people both when they go abroad, while they're abroad, but also after they've come back home. So we've got that covered to a large extent. Then the second part of the question was?
The second question about liver transplants, is it because
liver transplants? Yeah, we only deal with live donor liver transplants, so we are not involved in purchasing organs. It's against the law in the countries that we work with, and it's also against what we stand for as a company. So, in all cases, for any transplant, including a liver transplant, we require that the recipient finds a donor, and that typically is a family member, to go with him or her to the country of treatment.
Hmm. Did you get insurance that Vader was talking about, Henry?
No, I didn't. You know, like I said, no decisions. They were fine. You know what I mean? And even in the United States, it's pretty hard to sue somebody or sue a right. doctor or sue a hospital. So I don't know how many, even when you have the chance to defend yourself in the States, how much chance you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben is next from Madison. Hi, Ben. Ben, are you there? All right, Ben is gone. So let's go to Alan from Madison. Hi, Alan.
Is part of the reduced cost in these other countries a result of their lower standards of living? Everything costs less there. Here, our standards are higher, and so everything costs more. So might that be a good part of the reason that procedures are cheaper in these other countries?
Gotcha.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yep. It's, you know, from the ground on up, from the construction workers that build the hospital to the doctors themselves. The cost of living in other countries is much lower in most cases than in the U.S., and that results in a lower cost of service.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call. Paul from Green Bay is next. Hi, Paul.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this was asked earlier, but do insurance companies here pay for procedures overseas is the question. And then I had a comment, but I'll take the answer to the question first.
Okay. Yeah, they do more and more. It's in the startup phase now, I would say. So it happens in one of two ways. Excuse me. It happens when on a one-off basis. So we've helped out some people that we've been able to arrange their insurance company to pay for them for their treatment abroad, and really what we have to show is that the quality of care abroad is equal to what can be found in the U.S. And specifically for one type of treatment, we've been very successful, and that treatment is hip resurfacing. It's been done in the countries that we work with for more than a decade now, whereas in the U.S. it was FDA approved about 3 years ago. So it's fairly easy to show an insurance company that the doctor that we work with three doctors in this area, are very, very highly qualified. And then we can show the insurance company that they would save a lot of money as well, and then usually they're okay with paying for the treatment abroad.
Hmm.
And the other area that it's happening is on a more larger scale basis, where pretty much all of the insurance companies, all the large full carriers, they're looking into offering this as part of a standard policy now. Many insurance companies have either started the pilot project, or they've started the vendor selection process of a company like ours. I think we're going to see next year that these pilot projects are going to get expanded, and it'll be available on a much wider scale.
Kathleen, the comment?
Yes, go ahead, Paul.
First, this is a great show, and I would think it'd be wonderful for Wisconsin Public Radio to look more deeply into this and perhaps do a very quick documentary about this, because I have a sense that if the national public, if the general public could hear these stories, it might change the direction of the healthcare debate and cause people to be outraged for all the right reasons, and could cause us to get the kind of healthcare system that we need.
Oh,
thanks very much for coming on the show, Bob.
Yeah,
thank you, Paul.
Thanks very much for the call. It does take the healthcare debate in a pretty dramatic direction here, just to hear some of these stories. Do you think that if people heard a lot of these stories, it would change the nature of the debate in this country, Valter?
I think medical travel would be a partial solution to the healthcare crisis in the U.S. I don't believe it's a full solution, but I think it definitely will change the debate. It's not a full solution because we need to be very strict in who can travel to get treatment abroad. We take this very seriously. So, for instance, we have registered nurses that help the people out to determine whether they are a candidate to go abroad. So in some cases, they're not medically fit. For instance, Henry flew to India. It's a long trip.
Sure it is,
and,
yeah.
And not everybody can go through that. In other cases, the cost savings are not there. In other cases, the length of stay is too long, and you know, especially when people deal with a medical situation, they don't want to stay abroad too long. And then there's an issue of aftercare. You know, we need to know with some degree of certainty what that aftercare looks like. If people meet those criteria, then they're good candidates to go abroad. But not everybody's going to meet those criteria. So it's not a complete solution to the U.S. healthcare crisis. I don't believe that we will see millions of Americans go abroad for healthcare anytime soon. Where it does change the debate is kind of some of the questions that you asked and that some of your listeners asked. How come it is so much cheaper abroad?
Yes.
And again, you know, part of the reason is the cost of living abroad is lower, and that's not an easy item to fix overnight. But there are other reasons. There is the reason of defensive medicine. There is the way that hospitals get built from the ground on up with all the IT infrastructure completely in place. Those things, I think, the U.S. can learn a lot from.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also the fact, Henry, when you hear your story, you think, and I'm wondering how people hear your story and how they respond to it. How could this guy who's working really hard, who had this pre-existing condition, not be able to pay for surgery that costs $170,000 in the United States, can't afford it, goes to India to get the surgery, and it's $20,000. There are a lot of parts to your story that I would think add to the healthcare debate here in this country. Of course you should have insurance. I mean, people shouldn't have to go to foreign countries to get surgery for something that's life-threatening.
No, and, you know, I mean, I'm glad I went. They did a less invasive surgery than I probably would have got here if I had to, like, just, you know, fake a heart attack and, you know, go get it. So, and plus you pick your surgeon. I don't know in an emergency case here that in that case I would have got to pick who's going to work on me. But yeah, it does anger you in the fact that, geez, 8,000 miles, that's quite a flight.
Well, sure.
You know?
And you had to pay for it.
And you're scared the entire time. You know,
right.
I mean, you are,
yeah.
But, you know, you got to be tough enough. And like Wooter said, you do have to be strong enough. It's not for everybody. You know, so you have to be pretty tough to get through this thing. And not so much as the surgeons and all that, just mentally.
I'm sure you do. Beth is next from Broadhead. Hello, Beth.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had gastric lap banding for weight loss in Mexico, and 5 months later, the band slipped, and so I was hospitalized here in Madison, and the evening before the surgery to remove the lap band, I couldn't eat or drink. I was told by my insurance carrier, Dean Care, that they would not cover the cost of the surgery, which was $25,000 to have it removed, and I had paid, you know, the $6,000 in Mexico to have it put on, and I wasn't well enough to get on a plane and go back and have it removed.
Valter, you want to respond to that?
Hear that, Beth. That's very unfortunate, and you're not the only case. Let's be upfront about that. These things do happen. We educate our patients about the chance of these kind of things happening, and so one of the things that we tell them is please look into whether your insurance would cover this. The quality of cover the complications should they arise is what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We help people out with that. We highlight that there are risks. You know, that's about what we can do. The question that you need to ask yourself, Beth, though, is, you know, you could have had a slip band if you would have had treatment by a surgeon in the U.S. as well. In fact, because we were able to cherry-pick the best of the best doctors all over the world, I would argue that your chance of getting a slip band if you would have just gone to a local bariatric surgeon close by in the U.S., it would have been higher than if you would have gone with our surgeons in Mexico in this case. So, and in that case, your insurance company would also not have covered the complication costs. So I think you still, in the end, although this is not a story that has ended well, I think in the end it still was a smart thing to do to go to Mexico and at least save, you know, $10,000 on the initial surgery there.
Thanks, Beth, for the call. Medical tourism is what we're talking about this hour. The CEO of World Med Assist is with us, and we're also speaking with a gentleman who had a heart valve replacement done in India, and we're welcoming your phone calls. We've had lots of interest in this topic, so send an email if you can't get through on the phone. The phone is 800-486-8655, and if you have a chance to send an email, it's talk@WPR.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to phone calls for our guests, and let's go next to Matt from Viola. Hi, Matt.
Hey, thank you. My question is this available for dental work?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. We help out people with that, and you know, depending on the extent of the dental work needed, people go close by to Mexico or Costa Rica, and again, if it's very extensive, they can go to some countries that are further away.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, very much for the call. When you, Henry, were looking into all of this, did you find that, and let me ask Val to this as well, there were certain countries that were known to have better cardiac surgeons than others? Did you look at countries other than India, or are they known for the procedure that they did on you?
No, I absolutely looked at, like, every country. In fact, I thought, well, if I got to have this, Costa Rica sure would be nice.
Yeah, right. It's close, kind of pretty.
You know, but it turns out, in my case, you know, for heart surgery, it's India. I wanted to go to the best place with the best doctor. In fact, Naresh Trehan was the surgeon for the president of India.
Oh, my.
So you're getting, like, the best guys.
Yes. And what about you, Valter? As you look at all the countries in the world, are some people trained to go into one medical profession more than others? So there's a specialty in Costa Rica or a specialty in India?
Yeah, absolutely. There are. Henry's absolutely right. Cardiac care in India is among the best in the world. There is a high prevalence of cardiac diseases in India. And that combined with such a large population, it leads to what Henry was saying, you know, doctors doing multiple cardiac surgeries on a daily basis. If you compare that to the U.S., you know, you might find a surgeon that does one a week or so.
Right.
It's a very different story. And that's true for other areas as well. We talked earlier about bariatrics. Mexico is very well known for that. Some of the best bariatric surgeons in the world are from Mexico, and they mainly cater to the U.S. patients. Costa Rica is very well known for cosmetic surgery. We work with an orthopedic surgeon in Belgium that's, you know, excellent, one of the lowest infection rates in the world as a country, and infection is a very critical area for anything related to devices such as orthopedic surgery. So definitely, yeah, there are hot spots. Another example, we work with Turkey, where cancer treatment is among the best in the world. So yeah, we were able to pick out, you know, the best of the best all over the world.
Let's go to Ben now from Madison. Hi, Ben.
Hi, I am from India. I've been here over 30 years, but every year I go to India. And I got to tell you, the quality of the hospitals and the doctors as such. I was just walking by, and I came to know about a cafeteria in a hospital, so I just went to visit and have a cup of coffee. It was for gynecology and delivery of babies called Cradle. I wouldn't believe the quality. I felt like I was walking into the hospital of the United States somewhere, maybe UW. It was fantastic, clean, nice, and so on. And that is not very uncommon. And also, I have lots of relatives in India. There's one, my nephew, who is a director of neurology in the International Institute of Mental Health in Bangalore, and he often visits here and a visiting professor at the NIH and so on. So the doctors are all well-trained here in this country, and therefore, the quality is pretty much comparable to this. And then now I have a comment about the pay. My nephew, who is a director of neurology, gets only around $150,000 overall, one of the highest, whereas if he comes here and practices here, he would probably get about $3 million. And unfortunately, United States is one of the highest paid for doctors, and they probably deserve it. They save lives, but we got to recognize elsewhere, all over the country, it is much lower in comparison, and that is part of the problem. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but that, unfortunately, also has become a problem.
Fauci.
Yeah, absolutely. Good points, Ben. I totally agree. And, you know, to give an example, in Henry's case, when we talk about quality, Henry's doctor is a U.S. board-certified doctor. He practiced in New York many, many years, has a lot of inventions behind his name, a lot of new protocols behind his name. The success percentage that he is able to achieve for instance, a heart bypass surgery is 99.6%.
Woo!
The average in the U.S. is 98%. So what that really means is a 0.4% of something seriously going wrong in India and a 2% chance of something seriously going wrong in the U.S. So you're five times better off getting the surgery done by him in India than you would be at an average hospital in the U.S. In terms of the money that doctors make, yeah, it's true. It does go hand in hand with the cost of living. So that surgeon, that neurosurgeon that lives in India that makes $150,000, he probably leads a just as nice of a lifestyle as his colleague in the U.S. that makes $2 million.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ben, for the call. Henry, do you want to comment on the hospitals in India, the standards?
Yeah, I was actually hospitalized for a blood infection, which had opened up this mitral valve prolapse that I had. So I was in the hospital here, and just the antibiotics were $10,000. But you know, when I went to India, you're just in like a regular hospital. I was worried too. You know, you drive through the traffic and you know past the cows and all that stuff, and you go to the hospital, and it was great. The folks were great. The staff, you know, took good care of me, and you know, they watch out for everything. So, except for the Indian folks there, you're in any hospital,
right?
Any good hospital.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if, as we debate healthcare reform in this country, is there a way, do you think, Wouter, for us to look at this as a model, even if we had universal coverage in this country? Is there something to be said for people going to all parts of the world for health care? Or does it make more sense to cover everybody and revamp a system and have the care done here?
I think globalized health care is going to be part of whatever reform we'll see. When we look at the current reform debate, there is a lot of talk about shifting costs and less talk about reducing costs. And that is because the reduction of costs is just not something that's very easy to achieve. Going abroad, the cost savings are immediate and they're staggering. So I believe that healthcare abroad will be part of the new way that healthcare is being delivered. Mm-hmm. As an example of that, you know, we've seen since the debate is really going on, we've seen a lot of employers that contact us as well, and you know, the fear that the employers have is there's going to be more cost shifting of medical care onto us as an employer. What are we going to do about this? We do not have the funds in a bad economy. We're struggling to stay alive. How can we absorb more healthcare related costs? So we've seen an amazing increase in demand for corporations in healthcare abroad.
Right. Let's go to Nancy from Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. In regard to your comments about the fact that American insurance companies, or at least some of them, will cover medical costs performed abroad. That led me to wonder whether that insurance company is also calling the patient and saying, well, we found a cheaper way of covering you, and therefore we're going to greatly reduce your premiums that you've been paying us. I venture to think that as news of all of this gets more and more prevalent, insurance companies are going to be perhaps forcing people to go overseas to have surgery done, and then they will make even more money. And this irritates me greatly.
Wouter, is that something to be worried about?
I don't think so. The way that we like to approach this is healthcare abroad in combination with an insurance company is a very good proposition if people have a high deductible. So, for instance, somebody that has a $5,000 deductible, if they were to have the surgery in the U.S., they would have to pay the first $5,000 out of their own pocket. As an alternative, the insurance company would offer up, you can go abroad, and we're going to waive your entire deductible, and you can have your partner fly with you, all expenses paid, $0 out of your pocket. That's the way we like to go to market, and that's what the insurance companies are doing as well. So ultimately, when you compare the option that the person has now to the future option, healthcare abroad is just an additional option that financially is more attractive, but it's not reducing the option that already exists in the U.S.
Thanks, Nancy. Paul, Duluth, Minnesota.
Insurance companies forced me to go overseas.
Paul, oh, I'm sorry, Henry, what were you saying?
I said the insurance companies forced me to go overseas.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
They made me go. I mean, I tried.
You had no choice.
Yep.
Right. Paul from Duluth. Hi.
Hi. So far, the conversation has talked mainly about private insurance. My understanding is that if you're on Medicare, your coverage pretty much ends at the border of the United States. And I'm wondering if there is any possibility that as a way to cut overall medical expenses, if perhaps changes in Medicare rules might allow for that type of insurance to be used for international treatment. And I'll listen off the air.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, I believe there are some possibilities there. So the discussion we had earlier about social medicine or universal health care, you can directly correlate that to a discussion about Medicare and Medicaid. That is the form of universal health care that we have for specific parts of the population. And the same principles apply. Yes, we could save a tremendous amount of money if Medicare and Medicaid would allow treatment abroad.
And we have time for maybe one or two more calls. Terrence from Colby. Hi, Terrence.
Hi. I was just concerned about some comments made. My wife and I had made a trip to the Caribbean, and we were in Honduras. And there was a man standing alongside the road, and he was selling trinkets and stuff like that. And I looked at him, and I said, "Man, what happened to you?" He says, "Well, I had an infection in my leg." I says, "Really?" "Yep." He says, "I think I'm probably going to die. I can't make enough money to get the operation." And I said, "What's the operation?" And he says, $350. I said, "To take care of the infection?" He says, "Yes. They have to amputate some more of my leg." "Oh, my." I said, "And what's the exchange rate here?" And he says, 18 to 1, 18 Honduran to 1 American dollar. I says, "Oh." So I says, "If I gave you $30, you would have enough for the operation, and if you would, we could take you right down to the hospital right now." "Yes." He goes, "Yes." There was tears on the man's cheek, and we took him to the hospital because we were in a taxi, and we had went in the interior. And if these people don't have insurance there, they give you a bed to die in. And I'd like to ask you about the exchange rates and how it works with the insurance companies. In this country, a $17,000 operation over in Mexico, and I believe Mexico's exchange rate is 15 to 1, and it would be close to $300,000 American.
Okay. Terrence, we're running out of time. We have about 30 seconds left. Walter?
Yeah, well, Terrence, exchange rate should not be confused with purchasing power. You know, we get our quotes in U.S. dollars, so you know exactly what you're up against, and the savings are, you know, sometimes up to 90%. The hospitals that we work with abroad, they're private hospitals, and it's true. In some countries abroad, the general population is not well taken care of. But, you know, we help out Americans get access to low-cost, high-quality surgery that is of very high quality abroad.
Yeah, which everybody on earth should have, right? Everybody
yes.
should. Thank you both so much. It was a very, very interesting hour. Henry, I'm glad you're feeling better, and thank
you're
you
great.
For sharing your story. And Valter, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. Our guests, the CEO of World Med Assist, Valter Huberex, and Henry Konzak, who had a major heart surgery done in India last January. Well, that was an interesting show, wasn't it? Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing this program, and thanks to Rob as well for on-air production in our studios here in Milwaukee. Thank you for all of your interesting calls, everybody. Great hours ahead on the Ideas Network. I'll be with you again tomorrow morning from 9 to 11. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute now before 11 on this Wednesday. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.